My name's Roger Grimes. I'm a principal security architect with Microsoft. Been with Microsoft going on 10 years. I've written 8 books on computer security over the last, I guess, 20 years. Probably at least 1,000 magazine articles. I'm the InfoWorld magazine security columnist for the last 11 years. I'm going, can't believe that. So if you hate that guy in that column, that's me. I've been doing PKI since Windows NT 4.0 Service Pack 4 back in the early 1990s, if you can believe that. I've done hundreds and hundreds of Active Directory Certificate Services installs, and I don't know for sure, we don't track this, but I think I've done the most SHA-1 to SHA-2 migrations for our customers, at least in the field. That's about all I've been doing for about the last 2 years. PKI isn't normally all I do, but for the last 2 years, because of the demand, it's been just about all that I do. I'm not a worldwide expert on SHA-1, SHA-2. I'm just a guy in the field that's having to do a lot of migrations and trying to figure out everyone's policy. And you're probably here because you heard there's going to be the SHA-1 deprecation and you have to have SHA-2 by January 1st, 2017 or something like that. And you're worried that your infrastructure might collapse or there might be some operational issue if you don't prepare appropriately. And that's a good worry, because I would say that in large, very large organizations, there's at least one critical operational application that breaks when they go from SHA-1 to SHA-2. In mid-sized companies, it kind of depends. But the thing is, you never know. You just don't know if you don't do the work and don't do the preparation. But I would say probably the vast majority of people in this audience would not have a critical operational interruption if they didn't do anything. And I'll tell you why that is. There are some people in this audience that if they weren't prepared would have that blocker. They would on January 1st, 2017, or even further back in February 14th, 2017, all of a sudden have a really bad morning. And I would say that it's really the people that aren't in this audience that are going to have the biggest problem. But what I hope today is to teach you everything about SHA-1, SHA-2, why you need to move there, why it's important, what is the big threat, and all the key takeaways, and even tell you how to migrate. And sometimes migrating from SHA-1 to SHA-2 is as simple as a registry edit, and then sometimes it's very hard. You have to uninstall and reinstall entire products and change registry keys and all kinds of other stuff. And we'll talk about that today. If you have any questions, you can pretty much ask them out at any time, unless we get too many questions and I'm not going to get through my 76 slides. But I'll repeat your question and then answer it to the audience. But thanks everyone for coming today. But again, I'm not necessarily a SHA-1, SHA-2 world expert. Even my kids would tell you that I'm not an expert in anything. My wife called to tell me that our new entertainment system that I'm very excited that I set up, she said that was a crappy entertainment system, even though it's got the 4K Ultra Dev. But it broke last night and she couldn't watch the debate. So I told her to wake up our 4-year-old grandson, and he did get up and fix it. So I think that means that I set it up appropriately when a small child can fix it and my wife is all wrong about me. But if you think I've said something wrong about SHA-1 or SHA-2, occasionally I do get corrected. Occasionally I'm wrong. Please let me know and we'll talk about it, and I'll tell you, oh, I just took a wild guess or something like that. But thanks for being here. And for the black screen. Aha, let's try again. Ah, here we go. Here we go. Most of the information in this session is taken from Microsoft's main SHA-1 deprecation blog site. So if you go to that link, and I think there's a short link to it as well, but that's the longer link. That has all the most up-to-date information. It gets updated all the time, and it's getting ready to undergo a major draft release. So it's going to be, for a long time, for a couple of years, it was a collection of a lot of different pieces of information, and now it's being put in a lot more prettier format and reorganized and typos removed, and that should be out fairly soon. I don't know when, but I know that the draft has been released, and that blog site webpage should be a lot prettier soon. I have a white paper I released about a year ago that you can go pick up, and I update that all the time. I'll update it after this conference, I'm sure. And there's also a presentation. This presentation will probably be up there. There's already an intro to SHA-1 to SHA-2 migrations that you can download yourself and use within your companies or whatever you want to do with it. So why do we have to migrate to SHA-2? Well, bad crypto matters. And sometimes you hear people say, well, it doesn't really matter. I mean, who cares if they break a key? What does that really mean? We have far more pressing problems. And let me say that you do. If crypto is your number one problem, that means you have your patching covered and your secure configurations covered and you have anti-social engineering training just perfect. but crypto does matter in the scheme of things. And by the way, if you want to, I've got a talk later on today called Data-Driven Defense. Please come to that talk. I think it's at 4 o'clock. But that talks about how you what you should worry about and when you should worry about it. But bad crypto does matter. SHA-1 has not been completely broken yet, but it is weak and vulnerable, and probably is just a matter of time before it's fully broken and used to cause other additional maliciousness. So Microsoft and other vendors came together a couple of years ago in the CAB forum and said, hey, we want people to move from SHA-1 to SHA-2 by a particular date, January 1st, 2017. And there's different little iterations. We had some updates by 2016. So they're already in process and live. And we have other ones going live at January 1st, 2017. And then other ones going live at February 14th, 2017. But now is the time to get moving. And as a matter of fact, I've been giving this particular talk for over a year. I think I gave it at Ignite a year ago. So this is towards the end, right? We only have a couple of months left. So if you haven't started moving on it, certainly is time to get moving on it now. Again, moving Active Directory Certificate Services to SHA-2 can sometimes be as easy as a regedit key change and then restart the service, and then everything it will issue from then on will be SHA-2 signed. But other times, a lot of times, you have to completely uninstall and reinstall the product and look at registry keys and other difficult things. So it can be a lot harder. I even have a lot of customers where they have HSMs, hardware security storage modules involved, and those security modules don't even support SHA-2. So sometimes you even have to buy new hardware to support the SHA-1 to SHA-2 migration. But you always have to do planning no matter what it is. We'll talk about how to do that. But here's an example, a really simple example of why collisions or why crypto matters. Here's an MD5. MD5 is a hash that was considered weak and vulnerable like a decade ago, maybe longer. But that was one of the most common hashes in Windows and other operating systems for decades. And it was even continued to be used for a while it was known to be vulnerable. And then several people put out demos to show that, hey, it could be used to do something malicious. And here's a relatively benign example, but this one guy made up, I think it was 7 or 8 different PDF documents, and all of the PDF document was named Who's Gonna Win the Next Presidential Election. I forget what year it was, whenever John Edwards was in the mix before he got derailed. What was that, 2000, 2008, 2008? But so this guy made up 7 or 8 different documents, and each one had a different answer when you opened it. And they all had the same MD5 hash. You can see they have the same MD5 hash, but a different SHA-1 hash. So SHA-1, they even had a different CRC, which is really not very secure at all. But this guy learned that whenever you do a hash, the hash usually doesn't hash all contents. The mathematics are making it jump back and forth and that sort of stuff throughout the content that you're trying to sign. And he learned that he could put 8 different answers in the same location in this document and using Adobe Acrobat, using a bitmask, turn on and off different answers. And this and MD5 just happened to skip that bitmask change. So even though the document looked like it had 8 different, or only had one answer, it really had all 8 in there, but he turned one of them on. A different one on a different document. So, of course, you could take that to the extreme where if someone says, should we bomb this location? You know, yes or no. are our troops removed from this location before we bomb it? Yes or no. So it could be a simple bitmask change that could be missed by the hash and could cause a different outcome. This right here is a lot more relevant to us today. So we remember the Stuxnet worm, right? The most sophisticated cyber malware ever made to man and made by multiple entities, probably took over a year and took tens of millions of dollars and took out the Iranian centrifuges and stuff like that. Flame malware is supposed to be more sophisticated than that, was found about the same time, a couple of months later, and it was appeared to be signed by a Microsoft signature. Here's the real example of that digital signature. What happened is that the people that used the Flame malware learned that we had a weak digital certificate out there that we used an MD5, and it was only 512 bits long, which really is super weak, because today we say that you should have 1,048 bits of protection, and the least that we'll accept as being valid is 1,024, but back at that time, there was a couple of certificates out there that were 512 MD5 signed. So they cracked the certificate, and cracking the signing certificate allowed them to sign their own malware and make it appear as if it was signed from Microsoft. Now, this didn't mean that someone automatically accepted this, and actually today, probably, I always hear different figures, between 10 to 25% of all malware today is digitally signed, but not a lot of malware is digitally signed appearing as if it came from Microsoft. That was the big thing here. And once we found out about the flame malware having this, we put out an emergency revocation and pushed out this patch to everybody that undid that and said this was a bad certificate. And we searched our universe and made sure there were no other valid certificates out there that could be cracked as easily. But this is a very valid concern that once SHA-1 does get finally broken, somebody could sign some malware on behalf of your company or our company or something like that if we didn't update and change and make it appear as if it is from your company. And today there are roving bands of cyber criminals that try to steal your root CA certificate and your digital signing certificates, and they sell them for, I think I've heard, around $5,000 on the internet to malware writers that then sign them to spread them throughout the world. And it happens all the time. It used to be a theoretical, now it's a daily occurrence. So SHA-1 and SHA-2, what is a signing algorithm? Well, a signing algorithm is actually this very complex cryptographic hash function. And the reason why I say it's very complex is that really in the cryptographic world, cryptographers don't know why it works. I mean, it works and it does its job, but mathematically, they don't always know why it works. They just know that the outcome is that it appears to work. And then sometimes they find weaknesses later on that show it didn't work as well as they thought. But it's a cryptographic hash function that when it's run against different digital content, we'll say digital content in this case, and that could be a document, could be a network connection, could be a file, could be audio, video, whatever, any type of digital content, it creates a unique output set of bits, sometimes called the digest, sometimes called the hash, sometimes called the fingerprint or message output, which uniquely identifies that content. So they take the math, and it's nothing but math, they put it against particular digital content and you get this result, which is a certain number of bits. And if we sign that, if that content doesn't change between the source and between the time it was signed and the time somebody's consuming it, then it means that that content has not been changed no matter how many other people had their hands on it. So it's kind of a neat little thing. The four properties of a good hash are, first of all, whenever you put in the same content, you always get the same output, the same hash. That's very... Hashing wouldn't be very good if that wasn't true. Also, whenever you put in any different content, you always get a different output. So you know that it's something different. And that's where like LM Land Manager hash made by IBM in 1982 and then pulled into OS2. Anybody remember OS2? And Windows. So LM hash is still backwardly supported there. Backwardly compatibly supported. But that hash, we don't even call it a hash today. If you look in all, we don't call it a hash. And one of the things is because we always took every lowercase letter and uppercased it, and it would still give you the same output. So that immediately breaks rule number two. Plus it split it in half in two 7-character bits and only looked at a maximum of the 14 characters and blah, blah, blah for passwords. So we don't even call LM hash a hash anymore. It also should be non-trivial for anybody to determine the original input if I just give you the hash. So if I give you that output and you look at it, you shouldn't be, oh, this is the input that they use to sign it. If you do that, that's called a pre-image attack. It's very bad. It pretty much means that it's broken really badly and that people can make your content, your secret content, or your private key from your digital signature, called a pre-image attack. So far, we have not had a successful pre-image attack against SHA-1, but when you hear that coming out, that's going to pretty much mean that it's been broken successfully and you really can't use it anymore. And then no two different inputs should ever create the same output. So if I put in two different things, they should never create the same result. And actually, that one's kind of tough to do. I think in Landman hash, if you were to go to, I think, like 40-character password or something like that, it would always create this collision. So you could actually literally put in a different password that was nowhere near the other password, but the output result would be the same. So you could actually come up with many different passwords that equaled the same hash and then use that successfully in LM hash. So here's common hashes. We used to use MD4 and 5 a lot. They've been thoroughly broken, and now we've moved into the secure hash algorithm. There's SHA-1, nearly broken, partially broken. SHA-2, which everybody's supposed to get here today, and sadly, SHA-3, which since 2015 last year, August of 2015 last year, is the new recommended standard that NIST and the NSA says everybody needs to get to. Unfortunately, nobody supports it, so we're all going to be doing a SHA-2 migration this year, SHA-3 migration some other point in time. So MD4 and 5, they were invented by Ron Rivest. He's the R in RSA. And you can see in each case, they were first broken in a particular date, but didn't get fully compromised to either that collision or that pre-image attack until many years later. And that's important to understand about the SHA-1 warning right now, is that both of these protocols, or both of these hashes, someone had some math against them, and then found out there was a weakness in it, and then published that weakness, and then other people built upon that weakness, or maybe they found their own attack, crypto attack, but there was always this, hey, we found a weakness, fully compromised at some other point in time. So what's happened to SHA-1? SHA-1 is 160-bit hash, and what that means is no matter what content you put into it, you get an output of 160 bits. And if I'm trying to break it, if I'm trying to brute force guess what that content was or what the private key that was used to sign that, theoretically, if you take the number of bits, 160, divide it by 2, so you get 2 to the 80th power, that's the number of guesses on average it would take somebody just to brute force attack it. In some cases, when you're trying to guess the original content or the private key, you would guess it right away. Your first guess would just happen to be the lucky one. Other times, it would take you the full spectrum for 2 to the 160th. So cryptographically wise, mathematically wise, we say 2 to the 80th is about the average number of times that somebody would have to guess if they didn't have some type of secret or some type of weakness that they found in the math. And 2 to the 80th brute force tries is literally really hard to crack, even if you have cloud computing. Even if you have a million computers, 2 to the 80th number of bits is a lot of bits. And very difficult to crack, if not impossible, unless you have some type of weakness exposed to it. And that's what's kind of happened, is that the SHA-1 weakness is somebody came out and said, hey, I can break that. You no longer need 2 to the 80th. I can do it in 2 to the 79th, or I can do it to 2 to the, I think they got it down to 2 to the 57th or something right now, which makes it a lot easier to crack than 2 to the 80th. So when you want to hear what is broken about SHA-1, all they've done is been able to make, they found mathematical vulnerabilities that allows the number of bits that it takes to crack it to be less than 2 to the 80th. And at 2 to the 57th, that's within the realm of a lot of people can crack that. SHA-2 introduced as the hash standard in 2011. So think about that. 2011, it's been 5 years, half a decade, that NIST and the NSA have been recommending that people go to SHA-2, and people just haven't because it's, you know, SHA-1's working just fine. We've got busy jobs. We want to do things. It's oftentimes called the SHA-2 family of hashes, and that's when someone tells me, oh, I've got SHA-2, I always go, well, what bit size are you running? Because SHA-2 doesn't necessarily tell me, although 99% of the time, they're running SHA-256 bit. So you're immediately, when you see the 256, you're going from 160 bits to 256 bits. And if I divide that in half, it's a lot more protection than 2 to the 80th, right? It's what, 2 to the 128 or whatever. But I have seen people that did SHA-512. They want to go to the full protection right away. I can tell you that it's a little bit of overkill right now. There's really no reason to do it. And there's some, like the TLS protocol doesn't even support SHA-2 at the 512 key bit size. Or certainly on Windows, you have to get a patch. We made a patch that allowed you to run 2 to the 512 in TLS. So when someone says I'm running SHA-2, just means we're running one of them, and you may have to ask, well, what size are they running? And what would I recommend for most people here? 256. And the reason why, safety in numbers, best practice, and that's what 99% of the world is doing. And it gives you a very good amount of protection, but if you're really worried about nation states attacking you and other things like that, that have the supercomputers and the power and the money to do it, you can increase the number of bits. One of the things we learned from some of the leaks recently is, even though there's weaknesses in these sort of, in some of the crypto things, SHA-2 really seems to be, if you use the right key sizes and above, seems to be very protective. You know, so far there's been no public leaks that they've cracked SHA-2 completely. SHA-3 again was announced last year, August 2015. It was selected in a multi-year public crypto contest like many other crypto standards. So they have a contest every 4 or 5 years and they say, hey, we want everybody to present your cipher to see if it could be selected as the next national hash for the country. Lots of people come together. One of my good acquaintances, Bruce Schneier, always submits something usually. Bcrypt. Did he do Bcrypt? He's got a couple of, he didn't do Bcrypt. Did he do Bcrypt? Anybody remember? I'm sorry, what? Blowfish. Yeah, Blowfish and Twofish he's done. I can't remember whether he did Bcrypt. Maybe I'm mixing it up in my limited mind. But he submitted it, and eventually for SHA-2, they selected somebody else. It was, what was it? What was the name of it? Well, I'm kind of losing my mind here. But it was a, Swedish Norwegian algorithm that they went with instead that became SHA-2. And he said, even Bruce, when he was commenting, because he was part of the reviewers that looked at it, he said, hey, my algorithms, two-fish or blowfish, which whatever one they were looking at that time, I think it was blowfish, but he said, mine's stronger, but the one that they selected is actually faster in software where it's going to be used most of the time, and it's very secure. So even the other experts that didn't have their cipher selected agreed that the SHA-2 standard that was selected was sufficiently strong. And that, of course, is before they found some of the weaknesses in it. SHA-3 is completely different cipher standard. So SHA-1 and SHA-2 actually share the same math, and the major difference is the key size. SHA-3, different math. So it's not going to suffer the same mathematical weaknesses and issues as SHA-1 and 2, but there's almost no support yet. Like, we even looked at, hey, since that's now been recommended as a standard, should we move to SHA-3? But when we looked at it, we said, first of all, SHA-2 is protective enough if you're using at least the first bit key size is strong enough. But number two, nobody supports it. And if we offered SHA-3 in our products, so many people would switch to SHA-3 and then break every single application they have that we didn't want to cause all the support calls. So Microsoft said, when SHA-3 starts to be publicly supported and people are using it and apps are coming with it, we'll put it into our product. So we didn't put in SHA-3 yet, but I suspect within the next 5 years, you're going to go from a SHA-2 to a SHA-3. Some other terms you need to know today: CAPI, the crypto API, that's the original API for our crypto functions inside of Windows, has not been updated since XP Server 2003, has very limited support for SHA-2 and ECC, elliptical curve cryptography, but it's still included in Windows for backwards compatibility. So if you hear that there's an application that is CAPI programmed or CAPI 1 programmed, there's a good chance it does not support SHA-2. There is one exception, so don't always rule it out. But if you hear that something's done, is built in CAPI, it's relatively old. We've been doing something else since Vista and Server 2008, and that's called CNG, Crypto Next Generation. It supports the newer crypto like SHA-2, ECC, and other things like that. And so if something supports CNG, you can almost be guaranteed that it's going to support SHA-2. But that's very difficult sometimes to find out. You have an application you come across, somebody wrote it, moved away, doesn't work for the company anymore, and you're like, does it work with SHA-1 or 2? You don't know sometimes. Sometimes it's hard-coded. Sometimes you don't know what they used. Although, actually, there's another thing called CAPI-2. If they write to something called CAPI-2, that's a higher level interface that supports CAPI and also SHA-1, SHA-2. So if you see CAPI-2, that's a good thing. Do I have that in here? I thought I had it in here. Maybe it's somewhere else. So CAPI bad, CAPI-2 good, CNG good, if you're looking at APIs. If you're using Active Directory Certificate Services or using Windows, the cryptographic routines that actually support particular encryption, like whether it's going to support SHA-1 versus SHA-2 versus SHA-3 or whatever, is called one of these two things here: either CSP, Cryptographic Service Provider, or KSP, Key Storage Provider. They're usually software routines built into Windows and other products you can buy, or they, if you have an HSM, they could be a hardware routine. But cryptographic service providers are legacy. They use CAPI, and KSPs use CNG and support SHA-2. So if you have Active Directory Certificate Services and you see a CSP being used, it's probably not going to support SHA-2. Although there is one CSP that has some limited support about SHA-2 that we'll talk about later on. But if you see KSP, just know for sure, at least every case that I've seen, they all supported SHA-2 and the later stuff. Oh, there's CAPI-2. So if you do CAPI-2, if there's a program written to CAPI-2, it means it can use either CAPI or CNG, which means it should be able to support SHA-2. So our support for SHA-2, well, of course, all of our latest software should support it. You do want to make sure that you're fully patched. But we also support even some limited support on 2003 and XP and 2008 if you have the right Wright KB patches installed. So if they're fully patched, or you sometimes have to download an additional patch to get full support or the best support for SHA 2. But, and if you have unpatched XP, it's not fully patched, doesn't have the KB Oracle, it's not gonna fully support it, if at all. Windows Server 2003, the original version is not gonna support SHA 2, you need to install some software. If you have Vista and later, Server 2008 and later, it should natively support, all fully support SHA 2. Although there are some exceptions, of course, because we're in the computer world. Windows 7, Server 2008, R2 needs a patch to support SHA-2 code signing and code signing verification. So even Windows 7, Server 2008 may need a patch to give you full support. And once Windows supports something, it doesn't mean your application will support it. Your application has to be written to be what? CAPI, CAPI 2, CNG, or use our supported crypto. And if you install another vendor's software, let's say like Google Chrome or something like that, that doesn't use our crypto APIs at all, it's all dependent upon that application and that vendor. So most of what I'm going to tell you today applies to our software and our operating systems, and then any other operating system that writes to or uses CAPI 2 or CNG or our built-in crypto APIs. Here's how to tell whether a certificate is signed by SHA-1 or SHA-2. What you want to look for is the signature algorithm or signature hash algorithm. It is to say SHA-1 or SHA-256, one of those other key sizes. Please do not confuse it with another field that's below those that's called the thumbprint algorithm. Today in Windows, all thumbprint algorithm fields, no matter what the type of certificate, whether it's SHA-1 or SHA-2, will only say SHA-1 there. It's just that's just some other thumbprint used to identify the certificate when you're looking for it with certutil or something like that. It does not have, this field right here does not have a security impact upon you. This field does. So this is the one that you're worried about, the signature hash algorithm. So every certificate, you can double click and open and see whether or not it's SHA-1 or SHA-2 or something else. You can also use certutil. So certutil, the name of the file, pipe, find string, space, /SPI, space, algorithm. I love when I teach classes today where I'm like, okay, get to a DOS prompt, and about 3/4 of classes look at me like, huh? I'm like, command prompt, huh? They don't know, the kids don't know. I'm like, we have to go to some type of GUI that represents the folder. Oh, okay. I'm sorry, what was the question? Yeah, PowerShell. PowerShell will work as well, thank you. Yes, yes. Everything you can do in, well, I'm not sure everything, but I think everything. Not for sure, but I think everything. And certainly you can do it in here. So PowerShell has a lot of the same stuff. It didn't, but it now does. You can also right-click a signed file. So if there's a file you think is signed, the first example shows you an unsigned file. So there's no digital signatures tab there. But if it is signed, it should have the digital signatures tab there, and you can see examples of SHA-1 signed, SHA-2 signed, or SHA-256. Or what I like is the last one is dual signed. So if you've got a company that creates its own scripts and files and you sign them, a good thing to do if you're worried about SHA-1, SHA-2 migrations is start dual signing them so that no matter what you need, it's prepared and ready. If you have a website or a website cert, there's certainly lots of free sites on the internet. You can go Bing out there and say, test my website for SHA-2, and it'll bring up about a dozen different websites, including this one. And then you can type in the website name and find out whether you have SHA-1 or SHA-2 on your digital certificate. Although let me say that almost none of the websites today, the public websites today, have SHA-1 certificates because they've essentially been outlawed since January 1st, 2016 in most cases. You have to get an exception to get a SHA-1 signed digital certificate for a website. If you've got Active Directory Certificate Services, you go into the Certification Authority console on the CA, right-click the server name, choose Properties. So you're on the CA Server Properties tab. Go to the General tab, and then look under Cryptographic Settings, and that will tell you what this CA is currently signing with. So what's interesting here is you have that CA certificate at the top of the screen, and if you open that, it's going to show you what the CA certificate is signed by. And that can be, and often is, completely different than what Shaw that the CA signs with. And they can be different. By default, if you're just installing, you do next, 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 next. What the certificate is signed by and what your CA is issuing by is the same, but they can be different. And this is an important distinction that's going to change the way that you do migrations. One is that, and like the root CA's own certificate is not evaluated by anyone for SHA-1 deprecation. Say that again. The root CA's own certificate is not evaluated for SHA-1 deprecation by any vendor that I know of. And certainly the CA browser form said we're not going to evaluate root CA certificates because they're self-signed and they don't get their authority from the digital signature. But anything below that is and will be evaluated for SHA-1 deprecation, or could be. And so you want to look at the cryptographic settings to see what are the certificates that or CRLs that it's signed going to be signed with. And this is a registry edit. You can actually change. I've got get reg. That's another way you can see what's in those two fields. You can say set reg, set those values differently, restart the service, and then everything that certificate services server issues will be signed by the new algorithm from that point forward. It's that easy in a lot of cases. If you see Microsoft Software Key Storage Provider, KSP, there, it simply is a reg edit to go from a single reg edit, the top one there, to go from SHA-1 to SHA-256, restart the service, and then everything else, everything from then on will start being signed by SHA-2. It literally is that simple. And some companies, I'm kind of embarrassed. I get paid anywhere from, or I get told I'm going to be on site for 2 to 4 weeks or 2 to 6 weeks to do these SHA-2 migrations. I'd say averaging about 4 weeks. And when I show them how easy it is to upgrade, like, you're here for 4 weeks? I was like, yes, what else would you like me to do while I'm here? But of course, you got to plan and check your application. It's easy to change it, but we don't know that the applications that consume it. I can send certificates to everybody, right? We can turn on auto enrollment, send all these new SHA-2 certificates to everybody. All the Windows machines, you know, that support SHA-2 are going to consume that certificate. But you don't know if the application that relies upon that certificate is going to accept SHA-2 unless you've researched it. So that's what you have to do, is get a list of all the devices and applications that are certificate consuming and find out, do they support SHA-2 before you get them there? Fairly easy to do the upgrade in this case, but not always easy to figure out if the application supports it. Question? So the question is, the root CA doesn't have to be changed. What if you have an intermediate CA? It would have to be changed if you're worried about SHA-1 deprecation. So the official rule is that anything below the root CA's own certificate might be evaluated, although as we'll see coming up here, in the Windows case, we only care if it comes from a public CA. So if it's a private CA, we don't evaluate anything in a private CA string for SHA-1, SHA-2 deprecation, for SHA-1 deprecation. That's an important point. Any private CA you have, unless you're a public CA, Microsoft and its APIs do not evaluate it. The only thing we care about is the public stuff, which I'll talk about what public means. Question? So the question is, could Microsoft's SHA-1 deprecation policy change? Yes. I'm not on the team that makes the decisions, and I can tell you over the last 2 years we have made changes, but I would say in general our changes have been to make the experience better for the user, less problematic, and I know that we're, I don't know if this is official, I'm not even sure if I'm supposed to be saying this, but I know that we're trying to make sure that we're kind of on parity with other major vendors so that the experience is relatively the same no matter what browser you're using. But let me go further. We're the only ones I know in our APIs that care about public versus private, meaning that if it's a private CA, private CA chain and certificate, we don't evaluate it. Other vendors do, as far as I know. I think if you're with Chrome, I think the first time I ever got called into a SHA-1 deprecation migration a year and a half ago is because they had an error on a Google Chrome browser for a private CA certificate. So in our cases, we probably do the least amount of harm, I think, and you can usually get around things even if we warn you, but there are changes. They get changed all the time. I think this year we've had 3 changes. So always go to that website that I put at the beginning on one of the first slides. It said, go here to check for our policy. And sometimes it changes because of a patch. Sometimes it just changes because we, again, want to have parity with some other vendor. But great question to ask. Does it change? Yes. Although I would say that some things are more likely to change than others. Like if there's and certainly an event, like if there's a SHA-1 pre-image attack, it's going to make everybody accelerate. I think once the pre-image attack or a collision occurs, everyone's going to go from the little warning to, hey, this certificate's not trusted at all, you can't use it. We'll block the file download because it can't be trusted versus the little warning. But a great question, and again, in general, over the last 2 years, what I've seen Microsoft do is be maybe a little bit more gentle in what they do. Not in all cases, but more gentle in some of the ways that they show things. Another question.
Mm-hmm. Would there be a kind of registry key setting to check remove this?
The question is, if so the question is, if suppose there's some big SHA-1 attack, pre-image attack or whatever, could Microsoft do something as extreme as caring about the private versus public and change the policy? Well, obviously the answer is yes, that could happen. Because we just don't, I would say though that we're not going to go out of our way to piss off our customers. So we'll let customer experience, and certainly customer experience and issues have already driven our policy to be a less exacting. I would think the public versus private decision, and I'm not the guy that makes a decision, I would think that would be a tough one to change. I'll go further. I think it's a great thing that we do it, but I think it makes the migration a little bit more complicated for two reasons. One is, you've got, hey, this is what Microsoft does, and this is what all these other vendors do. So in most cases, unless you only have Microsoft software, you have to be worried about, you have to treat it as if it's public or private, I have to look at it. Number two is, I think that it makes it a little bit more confusing. It would be nice if everybody only cared about the public one. Now let me say the CA browser form says we only care about public server authentication certificates. That's what the CA official browser form says, but you know, most other vendors have chosen not to make the distinction between public and private because it's difficult to know what public is, although I'll tell you what we think public is. Again, going back to this slide right here, when you're installing Active Directory Certificate Services, it will ask you what key storage provider or CSP that you want to install, plus what hash you want to. It defaults right now to SHA-1. I think in some future release of Server, it's not Server 2016, I think it still defaults to SHA-1, but eventually we're going to tell it to default to SHA-256. So during an install of a root CA, you need to change it from SHA-1 to SHA-2, and that will change, if you're doing a brand new root CA, that will make the root CA's own certificate be signed by SHA-256, and it's going to have the cryptographic setting, so everything below it will be signed with SHA-256 by default. Yes.
So, FOC 12, as you already said, is not widely accepted. So, you can make one of the submissions with software. Mm-hmm. But with 256, if you're looking to be more widely accepted, what about the when you pick that drop down? Because I believe I took that default option and it works fine with all of your Microsoft. If you want your Microsoft, I was choosing a software key. But I wanted to know when I want to support things like Netscaler, you know, Apache, and all of.
So the question is, I want to make an option that's going to make it as compatible as possible with all other people. Without knowing anything, certainly choose SHA-256. I've seen some applications, that's all they support. They don't support 192. Matter of fact, I don't think Windows itself supports 192. We only support 256 and above. So the safe option, because that's 99% of the world, is SHA-256. But you know, until you test an application, you don't know. Like even the SHA 512, it had to be that people chose it and then tried it and it broke things before they realized, oh, it's now we look in the protocol and the TLS protocol doesn't even support, wasn't written to support 512. Although I think it's being updated in TLS version 1.3. My guess would be that they're gonna support it. You definitely wanna be careful about ECC, elliptical curve cryptography. We certainly went forward with that a while ago, and it's just not widely supported. I mean, today, pretty much you choose RSA or Diffie-Hellman, and be careful when you go to ECC. So Windows supports ECC, but not every, like, you're talking about some devices may not support it. So the safe thing is RSA or Diffie-Hellman and some key size. As a matter of fact, I tell a lot of my customers, if you're going from SHA-1 to SHA-2, now's the time to kind of pop up your CA to 4096. But there is always, as you make that change, there's always a risk that something will break. But I think it's a great time to get to 4096, at least for your CA certificates. Whereas before, I'm always make all your CA certificates 2048, because you've also got to find out what breaks. Well, I think the things that SHA-1 or that SHA-2 breaks will also be broken by the 4096. So you know, now's a good time to make the jump so you don't have to change that in a couple of years anyways. ECC, I'd say do it experimental. Although supposedly ECC is supposed to be more resistant to quantum cryptography from what I hear. So I'm not a quantum cryptographer, although I play one on TV and Holiday Inn commercials. But if you heard about quantum crypto, that's pretty cool stuff because when they finally get enough qubits, I think they've only got it up to 8 or 16 publicly known. But once they get the quantum computer figured out, supposedly it breaks every RSA and Diffie-Hellman key ever made. That everything ever protected and encrypted with RSA and Diffie-Hellman is immediately broken. And the only safe crypto will be quantum crypto, plus some other ones that are kind of quantum resistant. And I think ECC is one of those that are kind of quantum resistant. Although the NSA published a paper, NSA about a year, is it either NSA or NIST, a year or two ago, that said, told people don't use ECC. They said, we have found a cryptographic weakness and you shouldn't use it. And of course, after kind of the debacle that went on that people discovered from one of the previous NSA leaks, a lot of people don't trust the NSA these days because we know for sure the NSA at times has tried to mess with our encryption standards. I'm putting that very gently. And they've made what seems to be a back door in one of the random number key generators, which, by the way, Microsoft's personnel discovered it and published it and presented on it. So I love people like Microsoft. Sometimes people go, Microsoft's got a back door. You know, y'all got to have back doors. I don't know. I don't make Windows. I'm not the people that make those decisions. What I can tell you is in 10 years, I've never met anybody in Microsoft that thinks we do it. Everybody I've talked to says for sure we don't do it. And when we did find a back door, a secret back door in the NSA random number key generator that we were told that every software had to have for what's called Sweep B compliance, we actually published it and talked about it. So the opposite of Microsoft creating a back door, when we find them, we publicly publish things about them. But anyway, so I don't know where I was. ECC. For some reason, the NIST and NSA has said that ECC has a cryptographic weakness and shouldn't be relied upon. And we don't know if that means that it really does have a cryptographic weakness or they can't break it and don't want us to use it. I don't know. It's sad when you can't trust enough. So why you need to move to SHA-2? The ultimate worry is that somebody's going to assign malicious content with some other trusted key, either yours or Microsoft's or somebody else's. Digital signature certificates get stolen all the time. People and companies, they've been stolen from Adobe and I think Apple and lots of people. I personally know of dozens and dozens of public companies that we trust on a daily basis, NVIDIA, other driver manufacturers where bad guys broke into companies and stole the digital signature signing keys, sold them to malware providers for around $5,000, and the malware providers then created malicious software that was signed by that vendor till it was able to be revocated. So it is a real worry. In this case, if they break SHA-1, they can literally break and get to the digital signature, create their own. If they get a collision or a pre-image attack, they might be able to create their own digital signing certificate. Even if they didn't steal it, they could crack and break it and then use it. The theoretical attacks against SHA-1 have shortened its 160-bit protection to 57 bits. Let me get this going. So it's still a long way from those attacks creating a fraudulent cert, but some people predict it's only months away. I say potentially 1 to 3 years, but I am an idiot, so I don't know when. I will say that I've had the same slide for almost 2 years, and the people thought it was months away then, so now it's been a year or two, and I've got the same slide, so who knows? But one day it will be broken. We've been here before with NB4 and NB5, and now's the time to move. Your planning, again, if you want to find out what the official policy is, and it does get updated time to time, go to the CA browser form, read the baseline requirements documents. It's as exciting as you imagine a crypto document could be from a standards body. Officially, the CAB only covers public TLS certificates, or really what's called the server authentication, OID. But every vendor decides for themselves and their customers. You have to figure out what breaks when you move to SHA-2, looking at all your software and your operating systems and hardware and devices. We call them consuming software and devices. So you have to get an inventory of them, figure out which ones are critical to your operations. Try to get an authoritative statement from your vendor. I laugh because for at least a year or two, I'd call a vendor and go, hey, does your software support SHA-2? And they're like, bless you, right? They think I sneezed. I was like, no, you know, SHA-2, the thing we all have to move to within the next year. They've never heard of it. They didn't know about it. I think most vendors do now, but almost all of them, I tell you this, if your software is older than a couple of years, it's almost always, hey, our new version does. You got to update to get that. And then no matter what the vendor says, yes or no, do your own testing. Like we had one where the vendor said it didn't work and we tested it and it did work just fine. But then do you continue? If your vendor says they're not going to support it, can you continue using that software? So you have to decide what you can move to SHA-2 today, what must be delayed and what will never be moved. Critical applications and hardware compatibility drives project schedule. I can give you our vendor statement, Microsoft's, and our applications, and I'll show you where you can go for everyone else's. Again, the most consistent Microsoft policy statement is posted there at that short little link. That's the same as the long link that I put at the beginning of the talk. And it gets updated all the time, has been updated dozens of times over the years, and it's getting ready to be updated. I say thank God in a couple of weeks to be a little bit more. It accidentally became the authoritative place to go, but it was like a hodgepodge of information. And then the people in control of that made it more readable and understandable and more inclusive. And now it's just getting a major editing update that it's needed for a while. Although sometimes you'll learn from Windows 10 anniversary update, they had a SHA-2 change in there. So I learned about it reading the KB article before it ended up in the main article. It ended up in the main article, but it took a couple of days. So sometimes other teams may announce changes first. And certainly a successful pre-imaging attack will definitely be an accelerator. So the biggest thing about our policy is it only applies to CAs that are chained in our Microsoft Windows Root Certification Program. And there are thousands and thousands of CAs in there, but that makes it public. That's what we consider a kind of a public CA. That means that it's either pre-installed on Windows to be a trusted CA, a trusted root CA, or if it's not trusted, we actually have an API, and there's a bunch of trusted CAs that are actually inside our API files, our DLLs. We've had people in the past delete our trusted root CAs and it crashes Windows, which is a bad thing. So now some of them are written into our actual DLLs, so you can't delete them. But if you come across another third-party root CA certificate that has not been trusted, most of the time, by default, Vista and Server 2008 and later will dial up to Windows Update and go, hey, is this in Microsoft's Windows Root Certification Program? And if it is, it automatically installs the root CA certificate as a trusted root CA certificate. If not, then you get a message going, hey, do you want to trust this certificate? So our SHA-1 deprecation checking, all of it, only applies to things that are in that program. Otherwise, our software will not care about whether it's SHA-1 or SHA-2 or SHA-3 for that matter. Well, SHA-3 it might, it's probably gonna break. And it only applies to TLS certificates, code signing, time-stamped hashes, and OCSP signatures and responses at this time. So you can see that that's a lot more than just what the CAB form says. CAB form just says TLS certificates. We go further to code signing, timestamp hashes, but I tell you what, most other vendors include code signing in there as well. So all the stuff that we have, our Windows enforcement is part of what's already in a weak crypto check that's already in Windows by Win. It's called Win Trust Verify. And there's already keys in there that check for MD4 and MD5 and other things and short key sizes like 1,022-bit keys. So that's already checked, called the weak crypto check. So that's the same thing that's going to check for SHA-1 for the appropriate things. It's in Windows, it's a registry key, and you can disable it. So there is a registry key I'll cover in a minute where you enable the registry key and then we don't do any enforcement at all, although we certainly don't recommend it. A lot of my customers say, hey, can I turn it on? Okay, it's not enforced yet. It's not February 14th, 2017. Can I turn it on now to see how your browser and software is going to handle it? Well, first of all, our software is being changed as we speak to handle enforcement. So how it handles it today may not be how it handles it in the future. But number two, I don't think there is a way to enable it right now. Somebody can correct me if I'm wrong, but as far as I know, there's no way to enable enforcement today. But again, even if you did, you don't know what it's going to be in February. So, of course, you shouldn't be using SSL certs anymore. You'll hear people go, oh, you need to update your SSL certs. Please tell them to stop. SSL is a deprecated protocol that's full of vulnerabilities. We now use TLS vulnerabilities, but really what they're talking about is a server authentication OID that we call SSL certs. But everybody in this room, start getting people to say TLS instead of SSL. It's one of those things driving me nuts because I'm a crypto geek. So TLS certificates signed by SHA-1 signatures will not be trusted after February 14th, 2017. That was a date that was moved a couple of months ago. It used to be January 1st, 2017, so we moved it to make it longer. Does anybody know why? Can anyone venture a guess? Holidays and New Year's, right? Like, everybody knows the year changes. You know, when we're having a drink on New Year's Eve night, there's some poor soul in a company in some country somewhere that's not having a good January 1st. So we decided, hey, maybe we shouldn't make one of the biggest crypto changes occur on the same night as the date change. And then someone told me, now it's after February 14th, which I think is Valentine's, right? Yeah, so it's all right. I'm never home for my wife anyways. Now I have an excuse. So we're only going to look at TLS certificates signed by SHA-1 signatures on publics from a public CA chain, and you can click around the warning. Although, if you do a public CA certificate, supposedly you should have stopped issued the public CA certificates on January 1st, 2016, and that's pretty vendor-wide, not just us, it's everybody in the CA browser form. So if you've got a public web cert more than in the last year, or since January 1st, 2016, more than likely it's SHA-2, whether you notice it or not, unless you went out of your way to get a SHA-1 exception. And even then, that SHA-1 exception can only be good to the end of this year. One of the big changes that did happen with the Windows 10 anniversary update and some other KBs that came out at the same time is that now when you go into our browsers, so Internet Explorer 11 or Edge, it no longer shows the lock icon for SHA-1 signed TLS certificates. So notice that this is HTTPS, and it goes to this website here, and you see the lock. That's what you would normally see on any HTTPS protected website. Once you apply that update, this is what happens. The lock just goes away. Question might be, is it still protected by the SHA-1 signed TLS certificate? Absolutely, the tunnel's still there, but the lock icon going away is just our way of saying, hey, you shouldn't trust it. So this will not interrupt you, shouldn't interrupt you, but it will interrupt you when your customer's like, hey, I don't see a lock icon. Well, let me tell you, most of the time when they're going to like Bank of America or something like that, they've upgraded the SHA-2 as the rest of the world should have done last year. But just know the lock icon could be removed if it's a SHA-1 cert, but it shouldn't cause operational interruption. Just makes the little lock go away. And here's an example of what you might see in Chrome. At the same website, puts a little X through the HTTPS, and again, the lock has an X in it. I kind of like that. I like that treatment. But some other browsers like Maxathon don't show or error out at all. Anyone know Maxathon? Use Maxathon? I like it because you can like steal video. I'm sorry, you can streamline videos out of other people's websites and save it on your disk. But I think it takes every link and sends it to China. But I travel to China a lot, so hey, they know more about me already. Sadly, and I think personally, sadly, in IE and Edge, you can no longer, if you see a broken lock icon or something like that, it no longer shows, it's no longer easy to click the link and find out about the certificate. That's a developer thing that they made. They're like, hey, people, when they see the broke lock icon, they never make the right decision, so we're just not going to put it. And now you have to hit F12. To see what the problem is. I disagree with that. I like just clicking on the lock, but know that once you apply that anniversary update, you now have to hit F12 to see what the problem is. But I am trying to get them to bring back the broken lock and let me click here to see what's on the certificate. They're like, well, people, and it's true, like Google's looked at this too, people when approached with a broke lock icon, when they look into it, the more you know about what that broke lock icon means, the more likely you are to ignore the error message and go to the website. That's because we've been trained from all these broken HTTP websites to ignore the error message. So we were like, no, we don't want people going by it. We don't want them clicking. I wish we were able to very easily do it without hitting F12 and looking through the developer's console. Code signing certs and file signatures. Deprecation only applies to files signed by a public SHA-1 cert. That's a pretty big requirement in itself. with a mark of the web destination. Mark of the web destination is just this, you could mark a file with mark of the web attribute, which indicates to IE which security zone it should be opened up in, whether it's the intranet zone or local zone or internet zone. It was introduced in XP Pro Service Pack 2 and IE 4. It's automatically added from IE and Edge for internet downloaded files. So any file you download in our browser is going to have mark of the web on it, but it can be, you can also mark it up in the file itself or an alternative data stream or HTML. So if a file's been digitally signed by a public CA cert and has mark of the web destination, which means all you got to do is download it in one of our browsers off the internet, then we're going to trust a file signed with a SHA-1 code signing cert if it's timestamped as well prior to January 1st, 2016. If not, it's untrusted as of that date. But if it was signed before that date and timestamped before January 1st, 2016, we're going to trust it until January 14th, 2020. And that's a change. I think originally we said that we're only going to trust it for a year or something like that. And this is what a improper or SHA-1 code sign cert that validates it or invalidates the download. It will tell you the signature of this program is corrupt or invalid. I would love that message to say, hey, or it's signed with a SHA-1 cert. It doesn't. It gives you that error message. But you can still open the folder and run the file. And Windows Smart Screen may, it actually gets you to go, hey, I understand the risk and I want to run this app. Okay, that's kind of nice. But I would love it if it just said, hey, it's signed by SHA-1, which is deprecated by the CA browser form, and click here if you want to continue. But it doesn't say that. If you're a developer, you can dual sign your files with SHA-1 and SHA-2, so they'll work with both legacy and newly supported systems. OCSP, Windows will no longer trust OCSP responses that use SHA-1 for the signature after January 1st, 2016. If the corresponding certificate has the must staple extension after January 1st, 2016, and what else? What else always applies? And the certificate is from a public chain, public CA or public chain. Every time you see one of our enforcements, you always have to add the other part, only the ones that are from a public chain. And so on. Some changes, some things are being planned to be changed, but they're not going to change them until a successful pre-image attack, some of these other things. Here's how you disable enforcement in Windows. We don't recommend that you do this, but this is how you do it. And so you can disable enforcement. And you might, I don't know, I think I heard it might be coming to GPO, but if not, at least you can do it scripting and some other things. But this only impacts Microsoft software and software that uses our crypto API checks. So you would not be, this would not disable enforcement in Chrome, for example. Active Directory Certificate Services, we support 2008, supports SHA-2, 2003 does not. If you have 2003, you should be upgraded, right? When did it go out of support? 8 months ago, something like that, anyways? But I have lots of customers still using 2003. Our web enrollment website does support SHA-2, but you only using version 2 templates. There's a rumor that every customer I go to thinks that you have to have what's called a version 3 template to do SHA-2 certificates. You don't. Version 2 templates will allow you to do SHA-2. And if you have Windows website enrollment from Active Directory Certificate Services, it will only show you templates that are version 1 and 2. So if you want to do a SHA-2 certificate through our web enrollment website, make sure it's a version 2 template. And Indes works with SHA-2. You might have to do a regedit. Although I've done them without regedits recently and it's working, so something may have changed. Outlook supports it. If you have Vista or 7 and Outlook 2007 and later, you may need some patches on earlier versions and they may not fully support it. So they may be able to read the messages that are SHA-2 signed, but not create them. In order to validate SHA-2 messages, Windows Vista with Outlook 2003 or later is needed. So to even read them, you need that. Anything before that, you don't need. Here's about code signing, and again, you can download this. Talks about signing with PowerShell. Certainly, PowerShell supports SHA-2. But notice, if you have an Authenticode catalog, It is not, if you have Windows Server 2008 R2, your Authentic Code Catalog cannot be SHA-2 signed. You have to upgrade to 2012. Although I think we're trying to deprecate Authentic Code altogether, I think. Pretty sure that's the case. I'm gonna click pass. Kerberos, supports. I used to actually, if you came to this talk 2 years ago, I was like, not supported. It's all mostly supported now. Microsoft's built-in crypto API does not support SHA-192. That is true. It does not support it. TMG does not support. TNG does not support CNG. everyone else, each vendor has its own support statement. Again, to support SHA-512 and TLS, you need to have a patch from us because it wasn't in the original standard. Most public CAs aren't issuing SHA-1-based certificates anymore, certainly not ones that are going to live past January 1st, 2017. And if you've got a public-facing site or server with a SHA-1 cert, you want to be upgrading now. Like, I've not been to a customer that isn't already the case, but you could have some old stuff. I have customers that still have lots of Microsoft DOS. I went to one guy that had like dozens and dozens of DOS machines. I was like, you must hate your life. He's like, what are you talking about? Those machines never get infected. Nobody's surfing on the internet on those machines. I'm like, yeah, you got a point there. Watch out for the stoned virus. Anybody remember the stoned virus? Or Pakistani brain? No. I've been doing this a long time. The gray hair is earned. I wish that's all we had to worry about. And you can go find out support statements from Firefox and Google and Facebook, et cetera, et cetera. And most people, most of the popular stuff has moved to SHA-2 and support SHA-2. So what is your migration project? You got to educate everybody involved. Download the PowerPoint presentation, either this PowerPoint presentation or a generic one I have or my white paper so that people learn about what SHA-1 to SHA-2, what it means, why you have to do it. Inventory all your critical applications and devices. Determine which ones can or can't take a SHA-2 certificate. Determine which ones can or will be migrated, which I've had customers that went, oh, that product, we have to disable it. We are no longer going to use it because it can't be moved and they can't update it, and so they just kill it. Or you put it on a separate network or something like that. Create a migration plan to convert them. Test it. Make sure you have a fallback plan. And if you're interested in such things, my white paper has a lot of this information in it, including the fallback plans. Then you get management to do the risk acceptance, right? We are not the ones that are making risk decisions. It's management. So you get your go, no go, and then you move. I've probably done more SHA-1 to SHA-2 migrations than anyone else at Microsoft. And I will say in most cases, everything goes very smoothly if you've done your testing. I've never caused an operational interruption event. I want to retire 17 years from now without causing an operational event. But I have had customers that just said, oh, we're flipping over. Everything from SHA-1 to SHA-2 today, life is great. And then a week later, they found out they had one critical application that crashed and their company was down for a day. You know, that critical application was down. So you must do testing. You can't just flip the bit. So remember, you don't have to worry about the root CA's own certificate. When you decide to convert, probably the easiest way is to have two PKI trees. A lot of times I go to customers and I just create a new PKI. So the old one is SHA-1 and 2048, and the new one SHA-2 and 4096. And we just start moving. We just start moving the templates from here to there. We unpublish the templates here. We put the templates over there. We test it and we move. And if someone needs SHA-1, great. We'll let them continue to use the existing infrastructure until it goes away. Or you can even have, there's a lot of different things you can do. A very common one is some people will create a new infrastructure and the new issuing CAs, one's a SHA-1 issuing CA and one's a SHA-2 issuing CAs, and you control who gets what type of cert by using the template security permissions. And keep going though, we're down to 10 minutes here. If your CA is 2008 and later, and it's already running the key storage provider, that usually means it can support SHA-2 already. And all you have to do is make one registry edit change from SHA-1 to SHA-256 or SHA-512 or whatever, and restart certificate services, and life is grand. Everything from that point forward, it will issue all SHA-2 signed certs from that point forward from that CA. So that's good, and I love that one. That's a nice one. But a lot of times I go to CAs that have been upgraded since they got upgraded from 2003 to 2008, and when I go in there, they're not doing a KSP, they're doing a CSP. I will back up the server, I will tell people I'm doing a test, and I will change the regedit and change them from a CSP to a KSP, change them from SHA-1 to SHA-256, and I just restart it, and it either works or it doesn't. And if it doesn't work, you have to do a lot of other work. You can toggle it backwards, but it is going to bring down that CA and crash it for that brief period of time, and you do want to back up your CA. Officially, Microsoft says you should never do this, that the only way to update from SHA-1 to SHA, or from a, actually from a CSP to a KSP, is to go through this uninstall, reinstall. But what I do, just because I do a lot of them, is I test. I go, can it be upgraded from SHA-1, I mean from CSP to KSP? And most of the time, if your server 2008 and later, if it's brand new install, that is the case. It's just a regedit change. But if you upgraded from 2003, it's almost never the case. So you can test it, see what happens. If it doesn't work, then you have to literally uninstall and reinstall the entire Active Directory certificate services. You even have to convert the keys or the certificate. The certificates, when a CA certificate has been signed by a CSP, you have to unencrypt it and re-encrypt it with a KSP. The problem becomes that the server that I'm usually on doesn't have that capability. It's 2003 or 2008 that was converted from 2003. It doesn't even have the capability to do a KSP. So we have to literally take that certificate, take it to a server, I think we now recommend server 2012, use CertUtil, unpack the CA certificate, repack it with a KSP, then we reinstall the operating system, certificate services on that CA, and we import that root CA certificate. So let me say that again. If the little regedit doesn't work, then I have to export the private key, the root CA certificate and private key to another machine that supports KSPs. I use CertUtil to export it. I use CertUtil to import it over here. I use CertUtil to unwrap the key from the CSP. I use CertUtil to rewrap it with a KSP. Then I move it over here, delete it from there, and I put it back on the root CA over here. And then I reinstall Active Directory Certificate Services. Then I have to go through registry keys. Do I have it here? Oh, I don't have it here. but in my white paper, I list, here are the 20 registry keys. There's like 100 of them. Here's the 20 registry keys that you need to look at and make sure are set correctly as you reinstall it. Now, with that said, it's not as easy as a regedit, but I would say on average, it takes me 1 to 2 hours to convert once you've done one. Your first one takes you anywhere from 3 weeks to a day. And then after that, you're like, okay, it worked, I know what I'm doing, and it takes 1 to 2 hours. So I'm at the end here. We talked about SHA-2. I'm ready to take some questions. Got a question up front here?
Question on, from software development perspective, if I'm using algorithms in my own code, particularly in .NET, what are the right cryptographic algorithms to migrate?
So certainly SHA-2, and actually, send me an email about that. I've got an email that I'll send you to a link, but there's a way in .NET you're supposed to do something you write to, and .NET takes care of it. But certainly, if you're allowed to choose, you want to do SHA-2, probably RSA or Diffie-Hellman and SHA-2 with key sizes of 2048. I don't know. So what he asked, what is the performance impact going from SHA-1 to SHA-2? I don't know behind the scenes in milliseconds, but I will say that I've never seen anybody notice the difference between a SHA-1 and a SHA-2 cert ever, unless you go to a key size of like 8192 or above. I did have a client that did 16K size key. So the SHA-1 versus SHA-2 is not as big as the key size change is. So your key size change is what could be a bigger impact. But
4096 is still solid?
Yeah, 4096 is still a good key size? Yeah, I've not seen anybody notice the change. But after that, absolutely, and I don't recommend it. I have been involved with those customers, and it took them like 2 minutes to open an email when they were using 16-bit keys. Question?
Do you know when the slide deck will be online?
Probably today will be online, and it's already online for this conference, I think. Do they not have it online? Yeah, okay, so I think it is online. And if not, you can email me, rogrim@microsoft.com, and I'll send it to you, or I'll send you the link. And it's already for sure, a copy of this, a generic version of this, is already up there, been up there for a year or two. Question?
So RADCS was on 2008.
Uh-huh.
My back comes up
So his question was, he had 2008, he backed them up, he set up 2012 servers, and then he restored from the Active Directory certificate services, I assume, from that. Officially, it's not supported, but in real life, if it's working, it's probably good. So if it didn't give you a red error message, when you go to start certificate services, if certificate services starts, that usually means it's working. But officially, you're supposed to do the uninstall, reinstall, and you got to change. Do you know, was your key, was it protected by a CSP or a KSP when it was in 2008? Yeah, but but officially, if you look and go to my white paper, I have instructions about officially what you need to do, and officially it's a lot more than a backup and a restore. You have to move the key from a CSP to a KSP, and you have to manually change some reg edits. If you didn't know this, we do not support in any restoration or any upgrade, any migration upgrade, directly restoring the registry. And that's because the registry keys are different. And in my white paper, though, it has, here are the 20 keys you need to be worried about out of the 150. So great question. But if you did it, and it seems to be issuing certificates, and it's got SHA-256 on there, you probably did good.
Okay.
Question.
Our migration project does scan, or occasionally scans for SHA-1 certs in the environment. And they came to me asking me how I'm planning on updating the SHA-1 cert on 43389.
Yeah.
RDP with the DLL.
So I don't know if the question is, can I update my RDP? Yes. Yeah, RDP supports SHA-2 and all of that.
How do you do that? Are you actually then converting using the DLL to some every machine having to have it?
I mean, no, so on the servers that you connect to with RDP, you're going to want to issue them SHA-2 signed RDP certs or TLS certs, server authentication certs. So you just update the servers you're connecting to with new server authentication certs, and then our RDP software works with SHA-2. Yeah, so if you're connecting to all the workstations using RDP to workstation, by the way, from a security perspective, you should always be using everything but RDP. You should be using PowerShell, you should be using MMC consoles. Every time you go to RDP, unless you're using the /admin switch or something, you're potentially doing a pass the hash attack type thing. So you want to get your companies away, you want to get everybody away from using RDP unless they absolutely need to. You want them to use MMC consoles, PowerShell scripts, whatever, those sort of things. You can download our pass the hash. We've got two versions of the pass the hash white paper, credential theft, and pass the hash prevention. Versions 1 and 2, look at version 2. But yeah, RDP, we're trying to minimize as much as possible just because of the possibility of sending your hash across the network when you don't need to. Even there's lots of ways to stop that, right? We have lots of anti-pass the hash protection features. Question. Yeah, can you simulate the enforcement of SHA-1 deprecation enforcement now? Not that I know of. I'm pretty sure you can't. Other than, let me say, from what's already being enforced, already it's being enforced in the browser, but the only reg key I know about is disabling enforcement of what's already being enforced. But again, the problem of trying to enable enforcement is that we're in the process of even changing our enforcement slightly right now before then to be more friendly. So even if you saw a particular behavior, it might not be the outcome you see in February 2017. Yeah. I'm sorry, what? You go with a more aggressive browser. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, can SHA-1 deprecation impact domain controllers? Not from a private CA, right? Most of you, I assume your domain controllers have a private CA chain, so certainly not. But I don't think on domain controllers, even if you put public, what would happen? If you put a public CA with SHA-1 on your domain controllers, there might be an issue because our enforcement may care. I don't know for sure, so I'm just thinking here. We care about server authentication OIDs, and the server authentication OID is going to, it depends on your domain controller certificate. Some of them have server authentication, and some of them have what's called Kerberos, some have domain controller OID, and some have Kerberos authentication OID. If it has the server authentication OID in that certificate, and it comes from a public chain, I bet we would care. So that's a great question. Anytime it's from a public CA, you gotta, you know, need to replace it. Well, thank you. I'm out of time here. Thank you so much, and I'll be glad to meet with people afterwards. Thank you so much for coming.